Proverbs chapter 10 tonight is our discussion. We've been going through the book of Proverbs, and we left off last week, am I right, with Proverbs 10:24? All right, tonight we take up with Proverbs 10:25. I want to announce that Friday evening at 8 o'clock in the Knights of Christ Hall, we're having a get-together and having a little sing. Our people are singing, like our regular people here who sing for us, special requests and so forth. If you'd like to come and just have a good time hearing special music, be in the Knights of Christ Hall at 8 o'clock promptly Friday evening. We'll get together and have some time of fellowship and refreshments, and also we'll hear some good music from our own people. But all the people 21 and under, unmarried, in the building, would you stand, please? All the folks 21 and under who are unmarried. Now remain standing for a minute. I'd like to talk with you, as I've done before. I want you to bring notebooks. If you have your notebook tonight, would you raise it up, please? If you have your notebook, would you raise it way up high? All right, keep it up. All right, thank you. If you do not have a notebook, I want you to get one and bring it to these Wednesday evening services. As you know, the book of Proverbs is written basically to young people. Though it's written, it's for all of our admonition. It is written to those who are not folded yet, those whose lives are not complicated yet. So I want you to get your notebook, and I want you to write down what each verse teaches in Proverbs, and then when you get through, you'll have a wealth of knowledge by which to grow. Thank you so much. Be seated. Not a one of you will talk tonight. No one will talk to his neighbor or friend or sweetheart. Everyone will listen very carefully as I teach the Word of God. And, of course, the older people are too tired to talk and haven't got a sweetheart. So you'll listen. The book of Proverbs is written basically to young people, and it says that older people will listen. You recall what it says? It says, young man, please heed and take heed to the words of the Proverbs, that now he that hath wisdom will hear. And so the older people are supposed to hear it too, but the younger people are supposed to take special heed to the teachings of Proverbs. All right, we're just taking them one proverb at a time, and I'm giving you the main teaching of each proverb and discussing it a few minutes, and you're writing it down in your notebook. All right, verse 25 is our verse tonight. But first, I want someone to give me something that you've learned and that you put in practice. Some young person, something that you've learned and that you put in practice. One of the things we have learned in Proverbs, and something you're trying to do. Would you please raise your hand, and I'll call on you, and you stand up and give it to us. Quickly now. Don't wait. All right? All right, what have you learned, honey? Always obey. It's wise to obey. Are you obeying your mother? Mother, is she obeying you? Sometimes. All right, fine. Well, she's working awful hard at it. You'll have to. All right? Someone else give me one. Just anyone. All right? Stand up. What? Get nothing wrongly. That's right. Be sure that everything you get, you do have the proper motives and the proper means to get the right results. All right? Someone else stand over here in this corner and give me one. Just read it off if you want to. Yes, sir? Can you read? No, you can't. What? Tell nothing and everything. What that means is you're not supposed to dislie. You're supposed to not imply, not hint, not slur, not have that, you know, wink and know-it-all attitude and so forth. You're supposed to keep everything on the table, be forthright and above board. What else? Why? Okay, son? Yes, you're supposed to influence for right everyone you come in contact with. Okay, Gail? Yes, you get what you expect to get. Thank God gives things by faith. If you expect it and work towards it, you'll get it. All right, anybody else have one? Anyone else? Yes, over here, all right? Yes, sir, honey? Yeah. Use words that make people feel good. That's one of them. That's right. Always try to be friendly and kind and nice and make everybody feel better. Okay, who else back here had one? All right, son? Stand up. Stand up. Don't be lazy and always do your best. Any job you do, do your best. All right? Spanking is educational. That's right. That's what we learn. That's right. You learn a lot with spanking. All right, give me a teenager, all right? Always be sincere. That's true. Always be sincere. Okay, now tonight, Let us pray. Father, teach us the Word of God. Amen. Now then, verse 25. And I want you to look at it, the adults and everyone, look at it and see what you think the verse teaches. See what you think the verse teaches. As the whirlwind passeth, circle the word whirlwind, write tornado. As the tornado passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. All right, now a whirlwind is passing, a tornado is coming through, and the wicked are no more, but the righteous are an everlasting foundation. Now, what do you think that teaches? Just give me a wild guess. Anybody that wants to, raise your hand, I'll call on. Yes, sir. Well, that's a pretty good guess. It means you have a righteous life, you're going to go to heaven. If you're righteous in Christ, you will. All right, what else? Righteousness endureth forever? I think that's pretty good. Let me just break it down, and here's what I have. A good foundation is the most important thing. Write it down. Verse 25, a good foundation is the most important thing. Now, with that as a background, look back at the verse again. As the whirlwind passeth, so is the wicked no more, but the righteous is an everlasting foundation. Many of us that live, how many of you live in Highland or Munster or Lansing out in the South Park or Griffith? All right, many of you do. You recall, don't you, a little tornado that came through last year sometime? When was it? Last summer? A little tornado came through? Now, at Wicker Park, for example, and also at Riverside Park, some trees were uprooted and some were not. What would you think is the difference in the trees that were uprooted and the ones that were not if the same force of wind hit them? Some had deeper roots, right? And some trees were rotting, and they found that some of the trees, though they did not know it, they were in bad shape already. And what happens is this. When the tornado came and the winds came, those that had the roots down deeper could stay, and those that did not were lifted. Now, that's why, young friends, listen to me. It is important that you have a good foundation. The foundation is the most important thing of all. Now, we're going to build a new building. Thank God, and it'll take us a year to do it. But it'll be a beautiful building. It'll be valued at $500,000. It'll have a lovely library, a carpeted library, a three-room apartment for our guests. It'll have a nice dining area and a fellowship hall, a beautiful chapel. It'll have many departments and classes for our Sunday school. But there's something that must be done before that building goes up. Now, out in the rest of you, you see the exterior of the building. And if you don't see the most important part of the building, we're going to go down and down and down and down before we start going up. There must be the proper foundation. And so the wise man is saying here to the young people, before you do anything in life, you're going to have a good foundation. You know, people often say, well, when I get older, I'm going to do something. Verse 30, by the way, says the same thing. Look down to verse 30. The righteous shall never be removed, but the wicked shall not inherit the earth. The righteous will stand after the tornado comes, but the wicked will not. They'll be blown off, you see. And people say, when I get older, I'm going to do so and so. Look, young people, you're going to be, when you get older, exactly what you are now in most of the cases. You are now a little what you're going to be more of later on. What? The habits you start now or the habits that... Listen, how many of you folks who are older, you find it hard to change your habits? How many get up on the same side of the bed every morning? Wrong side, most of you, that's right. And, all right, now it's hard to change your habits. Now, you're developing habits now. Listen to me, young people. Listen to me. You develop habits now, misbehaving in church. You'll have habits later of misbehaving in church. Now's the time for you to develop some habits of sense and decency and character and integrity and manners and courtesies. Now's the time. The foundation is the time. While you're young, develop these habits and principles. And that's what he's saying here. He's saying a good foundation is the most important. Now verse 26, let's see what it says. Verse 26, as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him. As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to them that send him. What's a sluggard? A lazy person. Now, what do you think it teaches here then? Just take a wild guess. If you don't get it, don't feel bad. What? A sluggard is irritated. I think that's pretty good. I have written down here, no one likes a lazy person. No one likes a lazy person. Young people, there is absolutely, old people too, middle-aged people, Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Little Bear, there's no excuse for laziness. None at all. Look, you preachers are ordained tonight. Don't you think because you're a good preacher, you're going to build a great church. Don't you think because you can preach a good sermon, if I get up and be funny like Hiles and holler loud like Hiles and be dynamic like Robertson and be smart like Rice, boy, I'll build a great church. You've got a hole in your head. And you'll have a hole in your church, too. Hey, listen, you don't build churches, you don't build companies, you don't build businesses, you don't build schools, you don't build a life, you don't build anything that's worthwhile unless you work. More to it than a good sermon. Some of the best preachers I know, some of the best pulpiteers I know, have fallen flat on their face in the pastorate because they depend upon their talent. Talent never built a church. Talent never built a Sunday school class. Talent never filled up an auditorium. Talent never did anything. Hard work is what does it. Work. Work. Now look, as vinegar to the teeth. If you are infested with a little germ of laziness, go home tonight and get the pickle jar out and drink about a quart of the vinegar. That's how God sees you if you're lazy. Monday was Memorial Day. I hope you had a good time. We had a good time. We stayed home while I stayed home and let's say I played some catch with David and I wrestled with the little girls a bit, and we boxed. I got on my knees, we boxed, and they knocked me down, counted to nine, and I finally groggily got back up, you know. And then we had a ball game, Becky and Mrs. Hiles and Linda and I versus Earlene and David and Becky, and we won. I hit a home run the last half of the last inning, and we won 12-11. Aren't you proud of me? I'm a big bully is what I am. But anyway, we had a wonderful time. And then, I'm trying to get to what I was going to say. I guess I wrapped up my talent, you know. But my. But anyway, I'm the greatest. But anyway, I barbecued some steak. And I couldn't see them. The smoke, and pretty soon I forgot to take any water out with me, and it started blazing underneath, you know, and that always burns the steaks before they get done. And I tried to see them, and I couldn't, and I tried to hold my nose, and I couldn't, and smoke got in my eyes, and I couldn't see, and I was coughing. I thought the Grim Reaper was coming to get me for a while, and I was coughing, and the smoke got in my eyes, and tears got in my eyes, and the smoke was horrible. Now the Bible says that's what the way that a lazy person is. To a person that hires it. It is crooked to be lazy. You're as sorry as a drunkard if you're lazy. You're not any better than a person that curses if you're lazy. Some of you good Christians that say your prayers every night and read your Bible all the time and come to church and you don't drink, cuss, sit on the sidewalk, or chew tobacco, and you think you're a good Christian. If you don't put in a good day's work for your money, you're not a good Christian. Lazy! And so the Bible teaches, no one likes a lazy person, as vinegar to the teeth and as smoke to the eyes, so is the sluggard to them that send him. All right, verse 27. Let's see if you can think what this is. The fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. The fear of the Lord prolongeth days, but the years of the wicked shall be shortened. Now, what do you think that teaches? Just raise your hand, I'll call on you. Yes, ma'am. Well, that's a pretty good thought. When you get saved, you're saved forever, but I think it goes a little further than that even. That's true. That's certainly a true statement. Yes, ma'am. You live life, you live longer. Let's see what I've got here. I've got right living makes one live longer. So write that down. Verse 27. Right living makes one live longer. How many here would like to live longer, a little bit longer? I mean, you don't want to die tonight. Anybody like that? All right, most of us. The rest of you better get your hands up. God might see you. You got yours up, didn't you? All right. Okay. Now, the Bible teaches that right living makes you live longer. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, in discussing the Lord's table, it says that for this cause, because many of you eat and drink unworthily, for this cause, many of you are sickly and many are falling asleep. Now, that doesn't mean that you've gone to sleep physically. That means you've died. For this cause, many are sickly. Why? Because you take the Lord's Supper not properly. You've got sin in your life. You harbor some ill will against your brother. You've got a critical nature. You're not right with God. You sit down at the Lord's table, take the Lord's Supper. God says, many of you are sick because of that, and many people die prematurely because they take the Lord's Supper wrongly. Over in the Ten Commandments, one of the commandments that tells us something along this line is which one? Give it to me. Honor thy what? Set father and thy mother, that thy what? Days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God giveth thee. What does it mean? It means you honor your mother and father, you'll live longer. You kiddos that call your dad the old man, mother the old lady. I wish you'd do that to me one time. I'd give you an education, this little girl spoke about a while ago. Spanking's educational. You folks that don't respect your parents. Listen, I don't want you to call and say yes sir, no sir, just to me. I want you to set the mother and daddy too. Understand? 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 All right. Okay. All you grown folks understand? Okay. That's good. Now you're learning. The wise man will learn anyway, you see. All right. Now somebody's going to go out and say, I didn't first ask these folks are bowing down before Howells and saying, yes, sir, yes, sir, yes, sir. That's about all that hadn't been said about it. But anyway, okay. Right living makes one live longer. Honoring mother and father makes one live longer. In the first place, if you live right, that means you obey the speed limit and don't drive down Sibley Street 60 miles an hour and you won't run into a telephone pole and kill yourself. You'll live longer. It means you won't get drunk and drink liquor and ruin your liver and have cirrhosis. Fluorosis of the liver, is that what they call it? Of the liver. A man told me in St. Margaret's Hospital, he's in heaven now, he told me in St. Margaret's Hospital, he was saved before he died, he said, I'm here because I've drunk myself here. And so you live longer if you behave and live right. Not only is it true because proper godly righteous habits are the things that make you healthier, but more than that, it's the fact that God honors people that honor Him and increases and extends their lives. All right, verse 28. Look at it. Verse 28. The hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. Now, that's a tricky one. Let's read it again. Read it with me, please. The hope of the righteous shall be gladness, but the expectation of the wicked shall perish. Now, I want you to guess what it is, I don't think you'll guess it, but I want you to go ahead and try it. All right? Yes, it does. That's true. Righteous living makes for happiness. All right? Anybody else? All right, back in the back. The lady. What? The expectation of the wicked is not on solid ground. Okay, the boy beside her. All right, somebody else give us one. Anybody? Yes, sir. Yes, that's true. Now, here's the reason. Because the wicked are doing nothing to make their expectations come true. You understand me? Listen, I never talked to a man that said he wanted to go to hell, did you? Why? Nobody wants to, and the truth of it is, not many folks expect to go to hell. They keep hoping that someday God will knock them down and drag them and convict them and bring them into salvation. They don't really think they're going to hell. They keep hoping. The expectation of the wicked. Now, I have this written down for that verse, and that is planning and preparation and work, not hope, get results. Write it down. Planning and preparation and work, not hope, get results. Planning, preparation, and work, not hope, get results. Now, the wicked, expectation of the wicked, he's doing nothing to prepare himself. He's living a life of sin. He does nothing to work towards his goal. Let me say this to every person here, but especially the young friends. Look, set you a goal in life and work towards it and do something every day to go toward that goal. Decide where you're going. Decide where God wants you to go. For example, God, how many tonight here in this building, God has already called you to preach, whether you're on the platform or in the audience. Would you stand, please? God's already called you to preach if you're in this building tonight. Would you stand? Look at him.
Look around the building. Isn't that something? All, and there's some that are standing you can't see because they're too short to see. Thank you so much. That's a great crowd. We almost, really, I preach to as many preachers every Wednesday night as I preach to most nights around the country when I preach to preachers and so forth. Now I'm saying this. If God calls you to preach, you boys on the front. God calls you to preach, all right. Then you set your goal. Set it high. Decide what you want to be in the ministry. Decide what you think God wants you to be and work towards it. Find out the kind of preacher you want to be, the kind of man you want to be, the kind of character you want to have. You keep that thing out before you all the time. And every day of your life, and you're doing it too, he comes to me, just so happens. He comes to me and asks me about good books to read. He asks me about certain things a preacher ought to do. You watch these boys. They're dressing like preachers. My wife's about to kill me. My boy won't wear blue jeans anymore much, and we have some at home for him, you know. And the preacher's not supposed to wear blue jeans. I think it'd be good for everybody not to wear them, especially you ladies. But anyway, you look a lot better in a skirt. Did you know that, really? I said kindly, if I weren't against blue jeans, I'd be against them for ladies. I mean, if I had no conviction against them, I'd get one. You say, where is it in the Bible? I don't have to have it in the Bible. One look at you makes me against them. Put on a nice, decent dress and look like a lady. Good and nice. Traipsing up and down the street trying to be a man. Sorry as we men are. Don't try to copy us. And so my boy doesn't want to wear blue jeans. Preacher's not supposed to. I mean, I don't mean blue jeans are wrong. I simply mean that I try to teach the boys how to dress. And preacher ought to dress right. And if you're going to be a preacher, you ought to start dressing a little bit like a preacher. When you go to school, people ought to be able to say in the high school something different about it. I don't mean you've got to be a mama's boy and a sissy and a namby-pamby and an effeminate holier than thou and a pious fella, but I'm simply saying, set your goal up high and set your goal high and work for it every day and work a little closer and a little closer and a little closer. Now, you don't get that by hoping. You fellows want to be doctors. Decide what you want to be. Decide to be the very best. I've said before, whatever you do, do it well. Do it right. If you have a job to do, do it well. If your job is sweeping out the building, be sure you get all the dirt. If your job is painting the outside, be sure you paint it well. If your job is in the garbage can, don't leave any garbage in the can, especially at 8232 Greenwood. But if your job is emptying the garbage can, empty it clean. If your job is mowing the yard, mow it well. If your job is shoveling the snow, shovel it well. Whatever your job is, do it right. And then prepare for it. One reason why Christian education is wonderful. One reason why I try to teach you, and it's one reason why here at First Baptist we try to beat some sense in your head, because we believe, and I believe, that preparation, the proper preparation, is necessary for success. And planning and preparation and work, that's the way you get your goal. It's not hoping. All right, verse 29. The way of the Lord is strength to the upright, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. Now, the first half of that's the key to it. The way of the Lord is strength to the upright. What do you think that means? The way of the Lord is strength to the upright, but destruction shall be to the workers of iniquity. All right? Yes, and will also gain what? Strength. They that wait upon the Lord shall what? Renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings as eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not fright. Now, they that wait upon the Lord. I think here's what I have here. I have here, working for God makes one stronger. Working for God makes one stronger. People ask me often, Pastor, aren't you tired? You just preach all the time. Preaching don't make you tired. You preachers. I know preachers. On Sunday night, they come dragging home. You got to go out on the golf course on Monday and go bowling on Monday afternoon and have a tranquilizer on Monday night. And I preach twice today. Or before you get out of bed and read the paper on Monday, I'm preaching somewhere usually. Preaching doesn't tire me. Now, preaching tires me. Funny thing, I can go to a conference with Terry and I can preach 4 and 5 and 6 times a day and be as fresh the last time as the first time, but I can teach my soul winning course and I go out on the conference course and go bowling. Preaching doesn't tire me. Look, God picked me.
really the preacher that doesn't like to preach and doesn't gain strength. Listen, when you preach,
it's like a battery that's got a generator. Boy, it keeps charging itself all the time. When you serve God, you don't get tired. You folks that have to quit your Sunday school classes because you're about to have a nervous breakdown, you've missed the whole cause of your nervous breakdown. It's not because you've got the Sunday school class you have a nervous breakdown, it's because you haven't visited your absentee.
Dr. Hiles says that. Look, serving God never did crack anybody up.
Unless you did it in the flesh, selfishly. Anybody that got in the will of God and worked for God, it never did.
Now, sometimes you may work in the energy of the flesh. You may get physically exhausted, or sometimes I think your health might be impaired because of going too strong, and everybody needs relaxation and rest and to go aside for a season and rest a while. But I'm simply saying that keeping working for, look, work makes the person stronger, and work for God makes the person stronger. And so, stay on the job.
Number verse 31. We skip 30 because we got that along with verse 25. Okay, verse 31. The mouth...
Boy, I like this one. The mouth of the just bringeth forth wisdom, but the forward tongue shall be cut out. Boy, if we started cutting out tongues tonight, of all the people that had forward tongues and gossips and so forth, this is the quietest crowd you ever saw.
What do you think that means? Huh? Adults? Yes, that is. Teenage, huh?
Somebody's cut your tongue out, haven't they? Well, that's somebody else. All right, here's what I have written down here. A bad tongue shall be punished. A bad tongue shall be punished.
Did you know back in the Oriental days, in these days, Oriental nations in these days, did you know they actually cut people's tongues out? If a person committed blasphemy, made treasonable speeches, or was guilty of profane swearing, and could be tried in court and proved guilty, the punishment was actually physically cut his tongue out. That's right. Sure it would hurt. I'll tell you what, cutting your tongue out, some of you wouldn't hurt you as much as your tongue hurts others. And so they just, I don't know how they do it, but they just cut the tongue out. Just cut it out.
And so, I was thinking today about these treasonable speeches. I wish I could go down to some of these rallies where they carry these placards, burn draft cards, where these bearded idiots commit treason against a nation that gives them the right to say what they say.
Get a few scissors and just do some cutting. I say that in love.
Good night. We have lost our freedom on the tennis of freedom.
Man is not free to stand up and burn his draft card. Man is not free to stop. School teacher over here got up on the flag and stomped on the flag and said, this is just to show you that it's not the flag that counts, it's the spirit of the flag. And the judge said, acquitted. Gave the school teacher a little scolding and acquitted him. Now, if that school teacher spent about a year in the penitentiary where he ought to be, and had his tongue, not all of his tongue cut off, just cut off a tip at the first. I mean, freedom! Yeah, freedom! Fellow goes to school, no rules, no discipline, no laws anymore! God help the First Baptist Church to raise some young people that have some respect for authority, leadership. Oh, this generation of so-called freedom worshipers, and the very crowd that's doing it. The crowd, they know what they're doing. They try to steal the freedom we have. You mentioned a while ago, Catholics in Jerusalem. Oh, they bark loud and long. I said kindly about them, but I'm not mad at them, but I'm mad at the things. Brother, well, you won't talk about somebody criticizing other religions. You get what he said a while ago? These people in Jerusalem that frighten godly people from studying the Bible. And yet, in a country where they're in the minority, they talk about religious freedom. Religious freedom.
But these people that talk about freedom the most are trying to get freedom for themselves to become the majority so they can steal all freedom.
So the Bible says that the person that used a bad tongue is punished, and folks that made treasonable speeches had their tongues cut out, and folks that swore profanely. Listen, young people, and old people too, in the name of the name that is above every name, use decent language or keep your big mouth shut. You boys that think it's smart to profane and use dirty language about girls and make obscene gestures and use filthy, vulgar, vile language, that's not a sign of a man, that's a sign of a cowardly weakling. Use decent language. Don't listen. Use your tongue always for the glory of God, and let's rear some young people around here that talk right and have respect and decency and say yes, sir, and yes, ma'am, and no, sir, and no, ma'am, and know how to dress and know how to behave and respect authority and are good citizens, good students, and good workers in the church, and know what to respect and what not to respect, and know how to be decent and honest and upright. A bad tongue shall be punished. All right, look at verse 32. See what you think it says. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable, but the mouth of the wicked speaketh forwardness. The key to that, key to all of these proverbs, is the first half, the first line. The last line is usually a reverse, an inversion of the reversion of the first line, but the first line is the key. The lips of the righteous know what is acceptable. Now, what do you think it means? All right. God gives you wisdom? Okay, that's right. But wisdom for what? All right. Right and wrong? But it's talking about lips here. All right. I think you're getting closer. The wise have discernment in what? In what? What they say. Right. I have written down here about the same thing. Be appropriate in your speech. Be appropriate in your speech. Be appropriate in your speech. Now, what does it mean? Be appropriate in your speech. Here's what I mean. We ought to know, as gentlemen and ladies, when to say what. Now, listen to me. We ought to know when to say what. Now, for example, would you suggest I preach on hellfire and brimstone at the funeral? Is it? Do you believe in preaching hellfire and brimstone? You think I should preach it at a funeral? You don't think so? Fine. Not what? Not appropriate. All right? You think I'll tell the latest joke I heard at the funeral? Well, don't you believe a good joke, a good clean joke's all right? Or why can't I tell it at a funeral? It's not appropriate. Exactly so. Now, let me say a word here. The right kind of person knows how to behave himself in every situation. I think that's what education is. I think that education, good education, is when a person knows how to behave himself in every relationship and in every circumstance. I think a person that's properly educated ought to be able to go to a tea without breaking all the china. Don't you? I think a person that's properly educated ought to be able to sit on a log in Mississippi with a colored fella who's fishing for carp and talk to him and not make him feel intimidated. Don't you? I think a person that's educated ought to be able to carry on a conversation with a PhD and not think that and not embarrass his friends who hear him. I think a person that's educated ought to also be able to carry on a conversation with a fellow that's never been to school without embarrassing him and making him feel inferior. I think I told you, didn't I? I'm sure I did, about Abraham Lincoln, who poured his coffee out in his cup because his neighbor poured his coffee out in his cup. He was the president, but didn't want to embarrass the fellow beside him at a banquet, and so he did the same thing. And so the right kind of a Christian is the kind that knows how to be appropriate. That means, young people, I think you ought to know how to go to a place of social standing. I don't mean necessarily a sinful place, but it means you ought to know how to behave when you go to a place where they have somewhat of a formal atmosphere. I don't think it's smart ever to say, I just don't go to all that floofy old junk. I don't think there's any merit in that kind of talk. Do you? I don't think so. I also don't think there's any merit in talking about a bunch of educated slobs, uneducated slobs. I don't think there's any merit in that either. I don't think there's any merit in talking about people that know a little something as stuff church, or if you know something, talking about people that don't know anything as ignoramuses. I don't think there's any merit in either one of those. I think that it's a shame that opposites have to criticize opposites.
Now, I'm not saying that you're, I'm not saying you ought to go down to the opera every night and to the symphony every other night, but I think you ought to be able to go to the symphony and enjoy it without making a fool of yourself. I think a person ought to be able to listen to a good symphony concert and enjoy it. And then hear Roy Acuff ding dwaddle one. A spiritual one, of course. And enjoy. What I'm really saying is if you sing as classy as me or sing the Hornet song like John Finley, you ought to be able to. I'm saying that in life we ought to develop likes and dislikes that will make us scan the entire scope of what is acceptable and right and not be critical of the fellow who doesn't agree with us. I know people that like a certain kind of music criticize folks that don't like their kind. I know folks that like another kind criticize folks that don't like their kind. Here's a fellow, I can't stand the Messiah. I heard a fellow say one time, the more I hear the Messiah, the more I appreciate Stanford Baxter. Now, I love the Messiah. Also, I can pat my foot to a good quartet number just like you can. Or anybody can. I'm simply saying we ought to develop young people in this church that are well-rounded and can fit in any situation. Somebody came to Mr. Moody one time and said, Mr. Moody, God doesn't need your education. Moody said, no, and God doesn't need your ignorance either. You see? Now, this is the kind of young people, I think, to be appropriate in our speech. How should you speak at a wedding? For example, over there a while ago at the ordination service, some boys unthoughtfully and irreverently, while we were clapping after everybody too, they kept on. And I was ashamed of them. See, they haven't learned to quit cutting up. I get out here in the front and I block and tackle with them and cut up with them and blindfold them, and that's the way it ought to be. And I'm their buddy and pal. We walk inside the church, I'm not a blindfolder and a cut upper with you. You see what I mean? Learn to be appropriate. Learn to know when to stop cutting up. Learn to know when to behave and when not to behave. When to be rowdy. There's a time to be rowdy. I get out on the football field with you. I'll get down with you and I'll play right guard and we'll butt heads. Oh. And we'll butt heads and have a big time. But now we're not going to butt heads here at the church. People ought to know how to behave at a banquet. People ought to know how to behave at a service. People ought to know how to behave at a funeral or a wedding. And so be appropriate in your speech and behavior. Or look at chapter 11, verse 1. A false balance is abomination to the Lord. And hold it, I want to get back to the other. Last night, I was down in West Virginia in the Appalachian country. And some of the sweetest people. You know, I love God's people. Man alive, I was looking at those people as they sang last night. And I just fell in love with them. And a lot of them poor, some of the finest folks I ever saw. And so unaffected. They don't even know about the syndicate yet. They think Al Capone's a Bible character. They haven't heard about all that stuff. And I stood to preach, and how sweet. And, you know, I told the story about what my president of my college said. And they were so honored. Dr. Hiles was there. And they kept coming by and said, we've heard about you. You know, simple, sweet people. And really, they were so glad I was there. And one of them said, to think you'd come to our little place, way down here in the hills of West Virginia. And I told them when I first started, and they were a little stiff. I told them what my college president said the day I got up in the class, and I'd been called to my first pastor. Remember? And I said, Dr. Bruce, I was called to a little church up here in the country. He said, sit down, Mr. Hiles. And I sat down, didn't know what I said wrong. And I said, Dr. Bruce, what did I say wrong? He said, you said you were called to a little church up here in the country. He said, Mr. Hiles, there are no little churches. And I told him that I learned years ago, there are no little places, no little people, no little churches. And boy, they start brightening up. As if to say, oh, this fellow doesn't think he's any better than we are. And I'm not any better than they are. And just because you got a master's degree or a DD or a PhD, that doesn't make you any better than the most ignorant hillbilly in West Virginia. And you get off your high horse and quit acting like a snob and come down where us common folks live, and you'll get more done. And all house people. They'd come. After the service, one fellow came up. And not all of them were ignorant. A lot of them are very smart. But a few of them, you know, really, boy, they look like they just put on their first pair of shoes. And one of them came back to service, and he says, "I read about you in the store of the Lord." And he hit me. Oh, bless the Lord. That's my crowd, boy. That's my boy. Now, if you can't feel at home with that kind of, listen, if you can't fall in love with that kind of fella, something wrong with you. On the other hand, you people that think that anybody that's been to school is a snob, then you're just as guilty as the other side. We ought to be able to sit down beside the fella in West Virginia. You know what I said? When he did that, he said, "I read about you and saw the Lord." And I said, "You did?" That's one thing you preachers got ordained. That's one thing wrong with the ministry. We're so high and mighty above the people. We don't care about the common fellow. God bless everybody that loves Christ, whether they have $1 million or a dime, whether they know how to talk Greek and Hebrew. And I think you'll read the Sunday school lesson I wrote tonight, and you'll find that I think you ought to know how to use good English and have education and formal training. And I think it's very important. And I said planning and preparation and work and not hope get results. But Terry, wherever you are, don't ever get too high to go back to jump off and preach. And then don't ever get to a place where you couldn't walk into any pulpit in America and stand and preach the gospel and love the people, whether they're rich or poor, high or low. That's what it means. Now let's go down to chapter 11, verse 1. A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. What do you think that means? A false balance is abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. All right, I have it written here because time is fleeting. I have written here, I want you to write it down. Expect to work for what you get. Expect to work for what you get. It's kin to the one we mentioned last Wednesday night about, somebody mentioned a while ago, about don't get anything wrongly. Don't get anything wrongly. Expect to work for what you get. Let me say this, young friend. In this generation of everybody's handout, let me say, nobody owes you a living. Did you hear what I said? Nobody owes you a living. You ever hear this WBBM late at night? I turn it on Sunday night while I'm at home getting ready for bed and having a midnight snack. And last Sunday night they were discussing a guaranteed wage for every citizen. A guaranteed wage for every citizen. I don't care if you're white or black or, as the fellow said, if you're maroon. Your nation does not owe you a guaranteed wage. All your nation owes you is a shovel and some dirt to move. That's all your nation owes you, and you ought to pay the shovel out with what you make. Freedom is what your nation owes you, but your country does not owe you a guaranteed wage or a minimum wage. Your country does not owe you a living. God in heaven expects you to make your living with the sweat of your brow. So many people have the idea that my nation owes me a living. And those kind of people are not the kind of folks that built our country. No one owes you a living, young friend. Now the next verse is akin to it. Look at it. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. I like that. When pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. My mother used to say to me, and I've said it so many times to you, but she used to say to me, "Son, look everybody straight in the eye. Look everybody straight in the eye." She said, never look up to anybody and never look down on anybody. Now, if you'll just get there, it'll help you tremendously. Never look up to anybody. Mother said to me, "Son, you may not be dressed as nice as others, but you're just as good as anybody." Then she said, "Son, no matter how nicely you're dressed, you're no better than anybody." Never look up to one. Never look down to one. Now, with that in mind, when pride cometh, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. Here's what I have for that one. Write it down. Expect nothing and anything is a bonus. Expect nothing and anything is a bonus. With the lowly is wisdom. Now you compare that with the last one, you see. A false balance is abomination of the Lord, but a just way is his delight. When pride comes, when you think you're something, then cometh shame. But with the lowly is wisdom. Expect nothing. Expect nothing and anything is a bonus. Let me illustrate what I mean. Here's a person that is proud. Let's suppose for the theory that you and I both go to let's go to some college to visit. The camp. Let's go to Tennessee Temple to visit. Not now. We won't go now. But you're getting up like you're ready to go. But we go to Tennessee Temple to visit. And suppose we go in and I walk in and say, is the pastor here? I tell him Dr. Hiles is here. Dr. Jack Hiles, pastor of the First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana. That's right. Sixth largest Sunday school in all the world. One of the 10 largest anywhere. $300,000 offering last year. Dr. Jack Hiles is here. And you walk and say, I tell him, Lindsay's here too. Lindsay who? Well, just, he won't know who I am. Just Lindsay. Tell him that another guy's come too. And I expect him to come out and pat me on the back. Hello, Dr. Hiles, my heart, I talk. And Brother Perry, he just hopes he'll even shake his hand. Just to get to shake his hand is all he would be deserving of anything. So he comes out and he says, hello, Dr. Hiles, how are you? I'm so glad to see you. And hello, what is your name? Perry, I'm so glad to see you. He gives us both the same greeting. Exactly the same, which is what all great people do. All right, let me ask you a question. How am I going to feel? Huh? I'm going to feel like he's not treating me right. Is that right? How's Brother Terry going to feel? Honored. Same treatment. What's the difference? I expected more and got disappointed. He expected less and was honored. Now, in every relationship of life, if you expect nothing, you'll be a lot happier. A lot happier. So, don't be proud. Don't think of yourself. I like what Paul said over in Galatians. He said, I talked to them that seemed to be somewhat. He said, but in conference they added nothing to me. They seemed to be somewhat. God delivered me from these seemed to be somewhaters. And God helped me to be the kind of person and develop the kind of Christians that we're just happy that we get to fellowship with each other. And so expect nothing, Brother Floyd, in your church. Don't expect them to give you a mess of green beans every week. Here's what you do. On your anniversary, you expect them to give you a new car, and you get a bicycle, and you'll be disappointed. You expect nothing, and you get a bicycle, you'll be tickled to death. Now watch me. Some rascal give me a bicycle. You wait and see. I mean, I know you folks like a brook. I'll get a bicycle. But anyway, I'm saying don't ever expect of your people. Don't ever think your people owe you anything. They don't. If they give you one little old bean, that's more than you and I even deserve. And then if you get little bits, you'll say, bless God for it. But if you expect one of our deacons, got up 3 years ago and said to the pastor, I know what the pastor's making, and he said, I think you ought to make $15,000 a year. Said, other preachers down here with churches a fraction the size of ours are making more than our pastor's making, and I said, I won't take it. And so every year the deacons try to give me a raise, and I won't take it. And so this year, Brother Mitzka got up and he said, I know the pastor won't like this, but I just want to talk a minute. Said, I just think our pastor ought to have a raise. They ought to give him more money. And one of the fellows said, well, sit down. No use in you talking like that. I said, now leave him alone. He's doing all right. Let him talk. Now, I said, I'm not going to take the money, but I want to hear him talk about it. You see. I know a lot of preachers that would say, if I don't get $15,000, I won't work. Now, I'm not saying that I'm a great fellow. I'm simply saying I've learned not to expect anything. And then when you get something, you appreciate it, don't you? Huh? Did you ever expect a certain gift? Did your wife ever? Let me illustrate what I mean. This fellow in West Virginia where I was last night, wonderful fellow, tremendous preacher. He used a lot of our methods. And so he decided to have a big day, and he said he was going to have Christmas in April. I don't think the idea is very good. But he's going to have Santa Claus come in April. And so he got up and made the announcement. He said one of the most famous people in the world is going to be at our little church. In April. Now it's the Sunday. And boy, they started thinking about famous people. The next Sunday, he put in his sermon, he mentioned Ann Landers, and somebody said, that's who it's going to be. Ann Landers. They were serious. And then he mentioned Harry Truman one day in his sermon, and the rumor got around. And he said, this person is so famous that in every nation in the world, his presence makes everybody say, that's so. Everybody knows him. Just look at his face. And it was Santa Claus as it was. You see, Santa Claus. And boy, he built people. And you know what? The newspaper put in headlines that Harry Truman was coming. They did. And on radio stations, they announced it. And the Sunday morning, they had this special unknown guest, one that's known across the world, around the world, in every nation. Santa Claus. And you know what happened? When he got to the church that morning, the other churches had let out church and were lined the streets waiting for the parade. And he got this church, there are photographers all over the choir. And he said, he got up and said, now I'm going to open the door and bring out our honored guest. And it was Santa Claus. Hello? He said he didn't want to die so much in his life. Santa Claus. Does that illustrate what I'm trying to say? Suppose he had said, we're going to have a spy for you next Sunday. They'd have been glad to see Santa Claus. But they expected Harry Truman. Now, personally, I'd rather have Santa Claus. But there are those who think Harry Truman and his followers are Santa Claus. But don't you get what I'm trying to say? Don't expect anything. Don't think you're worthy for anything. And then when you get something, you'll bless God for it. You'll be happy with it. And then the last one is verse 3. The integrity of the upright shall guide them, but the perverseness of transgressors shall destroy them. The integrity of the upright. I like that. The integrity of the upright. And here's what it is. Live by principles and not by decisions. Live by principles and not by decisions. Live by principles and not by decisions. Set you some things that you believe that you're going to live by and die by, and let your principles make your decision. For example, I decided years ago nobody would tamper with my preaching. Nobody. Nobody. Not my wife, not my mother, not my sister, nobody would tamper with my preaching between me and him. Now, if somebody comes to me tonight after the service and says, I want to talk to you, if the deacons come to me tonight after the service, then we want to have a meeting and talk to you about your preaching. I mean, I won't have to decide what to do. That's been decided for 20 years. Look, if a young boy stops on some dark road and says he's out of gas, and you have to decide, well, what should I do? You decide years before that what you're going to do. Have some principle. Say, no boy's going to park. I'm not going to park with any boy and pet the neck like a bunch of heathen kids are. I'm not going to do it. And have a principle to live by and die by. And every time you face a decision, you won't have to make it yourself. Your principles make it for you. Look, the five things I live by. These five things have almost decided everything I've ever had to decide to do. Look, listen, let me read me for a minute. So, how many decisions do I have to make a day? Oh, I don't know how many you have to make. But think, if you can set a few principles and make a few decisions to live by, then those principles will set your principle up here and everything that falls, just like an IBM machine. Here's your principle, and everything that falls down falls on one side or the other. The principle decides where it falls. You don't have to decide. It'll save you. If a person has no principles, then he has to make a decision every time something comes up. And if you have to do that, you'll make thousands and thousands of decisions, and the more decisions you have to make, the more likely you are to make some mistakes. You see? So if you make a few decisions early in life to live by, principles by which to live, and let these principles decide for you, then it'll be amazing how you'll stand for God. So live by principle and not by decision, and let these principles guide you. I pray, God, I'm proud of our young people. I don't believe there's a church in America tonight that if they had all the preachers of their own church to stand, could have as many as we had to stand tonight. I doubt if there's a church in America tonight on Wednesday night. This, by the way, is commencement night, too, in the high school. But I don't believe that the church in America has as many people unmarried under 21 of their own church in churches we have here at First Baptist. I'm proud of Terry Smith. I'm proud of all of our boys. It so happens tonight we honored Terry. I'm proud of all of our young people. I thank God for you. And only God knows how I want you to mount to something. And I pray God will help these things to burn in your heart and burn in your life and make you young people of character. Look, it's not enough just to have convictions against a few sins. I want God to give you some character that'll make you pay your debts and dress right and behave right. When Dr. Robertson comes to me, as he does so often, and says some of the finest young people we have in our school, I don't think he's talking about they just don't smoke cigarettes and chew tobacco. I think he's talking about they know how to dress and they know how to behave. They're not a bunch of...